All right, everybody, welcome back to the 12th episode of the Tiger View podcast. As you can see, if you're watching on the video, we have Daniel back with us tonight on the show. So, welcome back, Daniel. And yeah, we're kind of gonna get into it. We're gonna kind of talk Clemson baseball transfers real quick, and then the mass majority of this episode, we're gonna be talking about a whole bunch of college football news that we've got going on recently, and with some recruiting and rev share and all that mess. So. Kind of first off, just want to talk on the Clemson baseball transfers in and out of Clemson. So, we've seen Ethan Darden, Tristan Bassetta, Luke Brown, Jackson Cole, Josh Davis, Chase Kayak, Leighton Lackey, and Hudson Lee leave out of Clemson. And then this past week, Eric Backage has been working on kind of regaining some more players out of the portal to the roster. So you got Alabama right-handed pitcher Arston Vesey. From Alabama, Catawba right-handed pitcher Hayden Simerson, and then App State shortstop and Sun Belt freshman of the year Tyler Lichtenberger, and then from UGA, infielder slash outfielder Bryce Clavin. So, Dawson, what are you thinking about all this transfer stuff with Clemson baseball?
I mean, to me, there's not a single name on that list that transferred out that actually surprised me, honestly. And let me break down that thinking. Ethan Darden, a lot of people probably expected him to be back next year, but I kind of did a little digging and talked to some people about it, and really it was he had kind of thrown his name out there to see where he stood as far as the draft. And really, it was either going to be the draft or he was going somewhere else. And that was kind of the rumor mill that picked up probably the last 2 weeks of the season. That again, I kind of had to, because I honestly, it somewhat was a shock to me, but after speaking with some people, wasn't a big, wasn't anything serious. Tristan Bassetta, I mean, he walked on senior day. He's been here for a while. It's kind of feeling like he's getting pushed to the side with TP Wentworth coming up, and he wasn't able to do a whole lot this year, so we wish him the best. Luke Brown, another guy that just didn't get to do a lot this year. He was that really tall pitcher, wasn't he? He's
I
like
think that's
six.
Jackson Cole you're
Okay,
thinking
yeah,
of.
my apologies, but I'm gonna say this, and I mean it in the nicest way possible, and there's no offense to these guys, but there are some players that I felt that were on this roster this year that simply were not good enough to play at this level. Like the 6'7" pitcher or whatever. He was actually like I think he was the fourth best like player coming out of North Carolina when he came out. And I mean, a guy that's 6'7" with those measurables should be at least mid-90s. But he was throwing high 80s, barely touching 90. I mean, that's just not going to cut it on Clemson. It shouldn't, at least. Leighton Lackey, honestly, I didn't even he I haven't seen him at the games in quite a while. I've thought he's been gone. I'm down there by the bullpen and down there by the dugout. I have not seen him for quite a while. Hudson Lee, just another guy that got pushed to the back burner. I mean, to be honest, if you want to change what's happening in Clemson, where you've kind of seen this repeat of, you're falling apart at the end of the year and you're just not good enough and your depth's not there, sometimes you got to cut dead weight. That's just what's got to happen. And you've got to cut that dead weight and you've got to move in guys that will produce. And I mean, so far, like you hit, we grabbed Arston from Alabama. I haven't spoken with him yet, but I found out he was gonna be coming here probably about 2 or 3 hours before he committed, which was really, really close timing. I haven't been really in the loop on a lot of the transfer news up until yesterday, but I can tell you what, Bryce Clavin from UGA, guy can play. I mean, he was highly ranked coming out of high school, and I spoke to some of my people with the team, and I mean, they believe that he has first round upside if they can, get him to play well. He's got some power. He let people know that on Twitter the other day. I think someone posted on Twitter, they were like, Clemson needs to get some power outfielders, and he responded with it, by posting a couple of his bombs there. But I'm really excited about him, and I will tell you this one thing, Gavin, as well. I think we were talking about it the other day, and to the viewers, is there's you. I would maybe look at a couple more popping off this week, and we did host a very special player Sunday too. It might not have been Sunday. It was okay, whatever. Over the weekend, we hosted, and from what I have been told, it was the Western Kentucky University player, Lucas Hartman. So, do with that what you will, but I just want to know your thoughts, Gavin, on how things have been rolling around here.
Yeah, so I kind of agree with you about all the guys that transferred out. It's kind of like you see those names and you're kind of like, oh, like I kind of had a feeling they would go, like you said, with Ethan Darden. I mean, leaving out, that was kind of, I don't know, it's kind of a mixed bag with that surprise, not surprise. And then Tristan Bissetta, he graduated from Clemson and only has like 1 year left of eligibility, so you can kind of understand that there. And then some of the other guys, like you were saying, just kind of getting pushed back pitching wise. And it's kind of like Eric Backage is trimming the fat off a little bit from just this past season's team. But then he's been working hard. I mean, as soon as the portal opens up, I mean, he was right back at work, getting some new players. So I really like what I've seen out of Bryce Clavon, like you were saying, Dawson. I've seen some of his videos, like the ones he's posted on X. And then I was telling Daniel before we started going recording that just like I really like what I see out of him. He batted like 300. And only 15 at bats and a home run, a triple, and I mean you could tell just he's a great ball player overall. And then like you were saying, Dawson, we hosted the guy from Western Kentucky. That's going to be a huge get if we do get him. I know we're battling some other big teams, but yeah, Eric Backage is already cooking. We've already got four players, and I mean the portal is just only a couple of days brand new from being open. So I'm excited to see what else he'll bring in. Definitely need some more pitching. That's something we've hit on really big, and yeah, just. I like what I'm seeing overall from the guys coming into Tigertown. Also, Daniel, I kind of want to know your thoughts with it all as well, too.
Yeah, man.
Daniel, how's South Carolina's portal looking like right now?
Little rough. I know we got Eric Parker. He was previously committed to the Gamecocks at one point. He committed. We had Amp Phillips, the USC upstate pitcher that came in. I'm excited about that one. Other than that, we've had a lot of guys transfer out. I think Petrie's obviously, I think, going to go to the draft, and I think he's going to do big things in the league and through the minors and get to the league one day. But man, we retained the guys that I think we needed to retain. Losing Pitzer hurts. But we kept Jake McCoy. We kept the two freshman cornerstones of Bo Hollins and of KJ Scobie. I don't I'm not gonna say that the future is extremely bright, but I think we're kind of getting a little bit better in places that we need to get better at. And like you said, the portal's just open, so I would say keep on the lookout for South Carolina and maybe getting a couple guys, because with the baseball transfer portal, you never know what you're going to get. Like I'll give you Liam Doyle went from Ole Miss to Tennessee, and he's a Golden Spikes finalist. So Littenberger's hitting 341 like that y'all got, and he could take that next step at Clemson and be a Golden Spikes finalist. So you never really know what you're going to get.
I've got a quick prediction right here. I have a super secret inside source here coming from the basement of Paul Mainieri that says that Ethan Petrie will be transferring to Clemson next year, where he hopes to compete for a national championship with Eric Backage and the team. But yeah, that was just given me today by my total legit insider knowledge from Columbia.
I do want to say something on the Darden situation, though. If you guys don't go out and get another starter, I really think that you're putting a lot of pressure on the starting pitching, because I know you've got Knock, you've got T-Bell, who looked really good at times. I think his defense kind of failed him at times, but T-Bell looked good. But then you've got Dane Moeller, who's coming back off of surgery, and I think if he's not ready to go, you're going to put that on there. But you also don't know what he's going to look like when he comes back. That's a major surgery when he comes back. Is he going to be the guy that you thought he was going to be, or is he going to be like a fraction of himself when he comes back on the hill? I think you do need another starter. I'm very excited for Simerson. 3.36 ERA when he was at Catawba and led the country with 16 saves. VZ's got velo. He's going to be good out of the pen, but man, I think you guys need another starter out of the portal.
Yeah, I agree. Like you were saying with VZ, though, He's got some velo with him, and that's just something that me and Dawson's kind of hit on, is we kind of need some guys with velo, and then with that comes, trying to throw some money at him with trying to get those guys with high velo. So I am glad we do have him, but I agree with you, Daniel. I do think we need another starter, maybe two of them. I don't know, definitely one, because like you were saying with Dane Muller, you never know how, I mean, coming back off of that type of injury, how somebody's going to look afterwards. All right. Well, anything else you want to touch on for baseball transfer wise, Dawson?
Not really. I'm just kind of waiting around, looking at the clock these next couple of days, waiting to see what may or may not transpire.
All righty. Well, now we're going to get into the big chunk of our show now, and that's all the college football news and college athletics as a whole news that we've had the past couple of days or so. So now I know y'all have heard Dawson talk on it before about rev sharing, but now rev sharing has finally been passed. So Dawson actually wrote an article about this, but Dawson, can you kind of just inform us a little bit more about what rev sharing is?
Yeah, so rev sharing is, and look, I'll just read straight from the article today. For those unfamiliar with the concept, rev sharing formalizes and institutionalizes athlete compensation with collegiate programs. Schools will now be able to allocate $20.5 million annually from their athletic department revenue, and they will be able to give that straight to the players now as a, almost like having a salary cap now. But instead of this being a donor-funded deal, this will now be a school-funded deal. It is more professionalized. And here's the big deal about what I saw people talking about on Instagram and Twitters. I just don't think a lot of people understand what revenue sharing is. They look at it and they say, well, our college sport is dead. And I'm looking at them and I'm saying, so what are we supposed to do? These last couple of years, we've had nothing but chaos. What are you, if we're going to professionalize the sport by paying these guys, let's go all in. Let's create this. Let's give a salary cap. Let's put a limit on this. And look, this isn't doing away with NIL. This is just a way to balance the scales in college football. So now NIL will kind of take a back seat almost, because all these deals are going to have to be legit now. And you're not going to have these collectives, which most schools have already parted ways with their collectives. Colorado probably being one of the earliest schools to do that. And now these schools are rushing to find out where they can pull this extra revenue from. Because to be honest, there's not a ton of schools out there in America that have an extra $20.5 million just to throw at players.
Yeah, so for the rev sharing, it's 20.5 million, right, Dawson?
Correct.
Okay, so that gets distributed through the whole teams in the athletics. So football obviously being the majority of getting that, and then what would you think would be next? Basketball would be next, men's basketball, and then
So I mean,
possibly
like,
baseball, or I mean, it really depends on which school is, I guess, good in whatever sport, but that's how I would kind of see it fit.
yeah, so like let me use it for example. A couple of months back, Louisville claimed that they were going to use $11.5 million in the transfer portal for basketball. And everybody questioned, where are they getting $11.5 million from? How can they just predict donor turnout? And my answer to that was, and it still is the same today, is that's not donor put out. That's, that's them using their rev share. There's a bunch of schools, and I would be willing to bet South Carolina's probably going to do similar things to where they're going to spread the money out more. Most schools are predicted to spend about 12 to $14 million or so on their football teams. And the rest of that money will be split between baseball and football, or depending on what they feel is their biggest need. In a school like Louisville, to where they say, hey, we're not really that great at football, but we believe in our basketball program. That's something we really believe in. So we're gonna throw $11.5 million out there. Or teams like Alabama or Ohio State or Georgia that are really competitive in all three sports, they're gonna have to break that money up a little bit more, rather than Clemson taking the approach of, we're gonna go almost all in the football because we've had such a money struggle these last couple of years. So we're gonna commit, $18 million to football. And like Dabo said, is, when it comes to rev share, there's gonna be nobody with more money than Clemson, and he's right. I mean, in tit for tat, when it comes to rev share, there's not gonna be many schools out there that could match, or say even exceed what Clemson's gonna give to football, just because that is what Clemson is believing in. That's what we're gonna buy in, and that's what we're gonna go. But Daniel, I do have a question. How do you think rev share, combined with now, NIL having to be legalized, how is that gonna work for our friends down in Columbia?
Well, I think the whole rev share in itself is really a tricky thing. You're getting 20, what is it, 20 and a half, correct? You're getting 20 and a half to spend over all of the athletic programs that are in a school. And I do want I you know the one thing that I do wonder about is where all of the money will go. And what kind of repercussions is it going to have for maybe like a smaller program or maybe a smaller team? Like a lot of the schools are going to focus on football, basketball, baseball, but there's other parts of that of the school and of the program that maybe they're more prestigious in. It maybe it's like Oklahoma has a very good softball program, so how much are they going to put into softball? Are they going to let softball slide because they got a good football program or up and coming football program again? In tradition, you've got their baseball program is kind of getting back on track. They were in a regional, I believe, this year. So I do wonder if something that is supposed to be for the good of college athletics will also end up being bad for it with teams getting cut or something like that because of financial struggles. But as far as in the college football world, I believe most of the schools are going to put it into college football. I think South Carolina included is going to be one of the ones that put a majority of NI or of rev share into college football. I do think that on the recruiting aspect of it, I think that it's not going to be as big of an advantage as a lot of people think it is. I think along the lines of the gray areas, because you're going to get paid by the school, but what other opportunities are there around you? So, like if you're in a major city, all of the NIL deals or the endorsement deals around you, what can you do with them versus what you can do in a smaller capacity? There's different gray areas around college recruiting.
I also would say that I don't really, like you said earlier, you thought that there could be a possibility of programs maybe being cut or having issues with spreading out the money. Is I don't really think that that will have a huge impact on that, just because this revenue sharing, it's not gonna be a mandatory thing. It'll be, the 20.5 million, that's a cap. Their NIL is not going away. What they are doing is legalizing, officializing NIL now, to where it is literally, players going out and getting themselves sponsored. So like a school like Clemson, their NIL pretty much has been straight from their collective. There's not a ton that those players have done to go out of their way and be able to market their names outside of, a select few things. And I believe I was reading a tweet put out by one of the College Football Reporters. Sorry, I totally blanking on the name, but he said that they were reviewing, a lot of the NIL deals this previous year, and he said that, well over half of the deals would not fly in the revenue sharing model, just because they're not legitimate. And I'm really, glad to hear that, because, that's not the purpose of NIL. NIL was never supposed to have 110 society or
Garnet Trust.
the Garnet Trust. That was never intended. That was never how NIL was intended. It was supposed to be for players to be able to market themselves. You weren't supposed to get a bunch of donors to put their money in a pot and hand it out to each individual athlete just for being there. That was never the point of NIL. But I think introducing rev share here now is taking the pressure away from fans. And, more putting it saying, hey, you can support your team, you can support your school now, and not feel the added pressure of having to fork out a ton of your money into players' pockets now because the school takes care of it. It's much more of an NFL style to where, you don't have fans in the NFL pooling together money to land free agent targets. It's if fans want to spend their money at, the Carolina Panthers stadium, they want to buy Carolina Panthers gear. That's helping the Carolina Panthers make revenue. So then the Panthers as an organization can go out and get players similarly to how it's supposed to be now under this new model in college football.
Yeah, another thing I do want to point out, Dawson. You know how this past year, really, you see all the Clemson athletes, football, baseball, basketball, what have you. You see them sharing tweets or Instagram stories saying, "Join 110 Society" or whatever, all this other stuff. But now, what I've been seeing recently is them doing the same thing, except saying, "Join IPTE." So that's kind of where it goes to with the rev sharing is. If you have these people buying IPTE memberships, all that money comes together, and then you're able to use that for rev sharing. So I thought that was kind of something unique, and you're seeing it right there in front of your eyes of rev sharing coming to light.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the it's like the entire way that Clemson has commercialized itself has changed. And like Graham Neff put out that statement a while back saying that, hey, due to the change in climate, we're going to be combining NIL 110 to IPTE to where if you donate to 110, you will still earn priority points in IPTE, or if you donate to 110, you will still be earning your priority points. So now that they can join that together, because previously 110 and IPTE, they had to be totally separate. 110 was an offside. All the collectives were supposed to be, broken off from the school to where the school wasn't allowed to be involved with it. But now, the veil is torn in a way where it's saying, hey, let's combine these two things and to help the school out better now. I just think it is a lot more organized now. I mean, people can are you know in a perfect world would we be dealing with any of this? Probably not. But it's not 2010 anymore. This is 2025. Sometimes you have to be realistic, and being realistic means tempering expectations. It means putting up guardrails.
Dawson, when's rev sharing supposed to start? Is it July 1st?
I believe so. Yeah,
Okay. All
sometime
right. I
early
thought
July.
so.
I believe it's July 1st, and I agree with a lot of what you guys are saying. I believe that gone are the days of these collectives going up and saying, offering guarantee, we will give you $8 million to come and play here, upfront money just to come and play for. I think those days are gone for sure. I think another thing that's really going under the radar here, that is going to be taking place is the new commission that they also have coming with in the rev sharing. So we're basically the MLB vice president of legal optics is going to be, or of legal, something with the legal of the MLB is coming to be the head of a commission that is basically going to be the new enforcement of tampering and stuff like. So the NCAA is basically kind of washing their hands of it and putting a committee in place. So I'm wondering, the MLB doesn't play when it comes to certain issues, and they're getting one of the top guys to come lead a commission in the college football world. So I'm wondering if now the tampering claims and how is it all going to be enforced? Because we, as everybody knows, the NCAA hasn't always had the most iron fist or the most consistency. So how is this new commission going to shape college football?
Yeah, and I would like to just mention something that you said. You said that it's not gonna be like teams just able to throw $8 million towards a player, and that's true. I mean, 100% true. Like in say if a team has $15 million in their budget for players now, that's probably like if you're Ohio State, that's less now. You're taking a little bit of a dip. And let's say that a lot of those NIL endorsements they won't be legitimized in this new era, so they're gonna have to limit themselves a little bit. You won't have a team able to throw an insane amount of money at a player compared to what a Clemson could do. That was the problem before with recruiting that so many people didn't understand was, look, if you're going up against a juggernaut in the NIL world, which was Texas A&M, LSU, teams like that that had everything to throw out at,
It was a bidding war.
Yeah,
for lack of better terms, it was a bit of a
you had no
bit more.
chance. But now in this new era, they still may have more money than you because of, it's still revenue sharing plus NIL, but it's not going to be the gigantic leap that it was before. The difference in $1.8 million and 100K, very different. Very different. And I think that's going to kind of sway players' intuitions, because honestly, if you're offering me $2 million to go to Georgia, even if I grew up like in Clemson, I'm going to Georgia. That's just, unfortunately, that's just how it is. But if Georgia's only offering me, a few thousand dollars more than Clemson, but I still really feel like Clemson's my school, I'll take that slight pay cut, compared to that dynamic or gigantic pay cut that it would have been a few years ago.
Like I was saying, with the way I think recruiting is going to work is, here's how much you're going to make, but then off on the side here, once you get on campus, here are the other opportunities that you're going to be afforded to do. So like if you're a Texas or if you're a Oklahoma or if you're anything like that, I think you're going to have still a, I don't think the recruiting gap is going to be as big as it has been. I still think there's going to be a little bit of a gap because of other schools are going to have better opportunities, because they're in different locations and in different fields of where they can make money, and to that extent. So in that gray area of rev sharing, I still think you're going to see a lot of people that are going to make their money off of, the way NIL was supposed to be in general, off of rev sharing.
Yeah, I mean, Gavin, this is probably for us too, mainly, is if you're a Clemson fan, revenue sharing looks pretty good if you're Clemson. I mean, 2025 is, everyone panicked and freaked out because of the loss of commits, and that was an NIL thing, is we were totally screwed on the money part, and now, teams are kind of already have been already planning for this rev share model. And you're seeing it in the next class, and you will see it come in future years to where things are going to look a little bit more balanced now, like in 2026. I mean, I know we'll talk about it later, but I mean, I know it's June, but Clemson's stacking that class right now. And that is rev share in plain view, is you're seeing us be able to compete with these Georgias, these LSUs, these Texas A&Ms, these Texases. You're seeing us be able to compete with those teams on the money level. And now, it's kind of back how it was a few years ago, to where now you got to sell yourself as a school. It's not just a check that you can write anymore.
That's
Yeah.
exactly where I
Go
was
ahead,
going.
Daniel.
Ready to go with that. Sorry, Gavin. That's
No,
exactly
go
where I
ahead.
was ready to go with that, is that now, instead of committing to the money, you can now commit to the school that you want to play for. Kind of like what you said with the Georgia offer of $2 million. If anybody offers you $2 million to go to school, that's where you're going to go. It may not be where you want to go, but the offer is too good to pass up. So now you can sell your program and your culture. And I think there's few better than Clemson that can sell a culture and a program, as many have said.
Yeah, I don't want to like guarantee anything, but my sources have also confirmed that Dabo just brainwashes players every time he gets them on campus. So that's how we do it.
Yeah, but going with what I was saying, it kind of just feels like it's kind of back to how it used to be a little bit, even though it's kind of not. But like you were saying, Dawson, you kind of have to sell yourself as a school now instead of bringing out the checkbook. And I mean, it's like you're seeing that come to light with this recent recruiting class that we have. Like, you got to think, if rev share wasn't coming out in play, like, you got to think, will we even be having some of these guys commit to us? So it's definitely glad to see, and I'm excited for it and see what it holds with it, because I think it is, or I think it will, kind of even up the playing field in the recruiting world.
Exactly.
All right, so anything else you guys want to touch on with rev sharing? All right.
I'm good.
So now I know Dawson and I've kind of talked about it on a couple more of our previous episodes, but just the playoff expansion, all of that going on. So Dawson, you just kind of want to lead us with that. I know we've talked on it, like I said, but it seems like there's always stuff coming out about it every week or so, with just new news about it.
And let me tell you, it's coming. I mean, it might not happen. It's probably not gonna happen this year, obviously, but it's coming. 16 teams are they will be 16 teams in the playoffs in the next coming years. And really now all the argument is now is how's the format gonna be set up? Will there be automatic qualifiers? Will it be straight seeding 16? And I'm of the opinion, and it has not changed since the last time we talked about this, I'm going to get a lot of hate from every Clemson fan that watches this and every ACC fan that sees it, but I'm in favor of the automatic qualifiers. I'm in favor of the 4-4, 2-2, and further and beyond, because here's the thing. If you put that cap at four on the SEC, you're not guaranteeing, and I'm taking a little bit of this from Josh Pate, who also spoke on it, along with some things that I read, and just overall taking a breath and thinking about it. You're not guaranteeing a Georgia or an Alabama to get into that playoff automatically. You're guaranteeing four teams from the conference. And if you can prioritize conference races now, that makes every game that you play in your conference a big deal. If you know that only the four best teams in your conference are going to get in, then at that point, you're just fighting to be that top four. Every conference game then means the world to you. Compared to if it was straight seeding at 16, you got three, you could lose three conference games and still, you could, or you could, yeah, you could lose probably three conference games and still might sneak in there. Compared to if you had the automatic qualifier, you lose three conference games, you don't have a chance to be that top four team or be that top four conference team. And I'm going to be talking to the ACC people here and the Big 12, who the Big 12 has probably given everyone a little bit more trouble than they'd like. But what are your other options? I mean, yeah, you can talk about the SEC and the Big 10, but what are your other options? You don't have another option because guess what? If we go to straight seeding, the SEC and the Big Ten are probably getting more than four in. Let's just be honest with ourselves. They're probably going to eat that field up. So at least giving the automatic qualifiers, guarantees that you're going to get a good regular season now. Every game matters now. It's not like this past year to where, Georgia and Alabama, either one of them could have lost that game, or say, you drop a conference game in November and you're like, okay, we're all right. We can still get in. Ohio State, perfect example. You drop that game to Michigan at the end of the year and they knew they were still getting in. But in this new format, if there's, two or three other teams pushing them and they lose that game at the end of the year, which is a conference game, that could push them out. It doesn't matter what they're ranked at that point. If they are the fifth team and if they finish fifth place in that conference, then they're out, So I think that it's a combination of automatic qualifiers, I think helps the season and helps pace of play and helps intensity during the regular season. And it also, if you're the ACC and you're the Big 12, it's a guardrail almost for you now. But I want to know what do you two think of it?
You can go, Daniel.
Man, I for one was never in favor of 12 playoff expansion. I don't like that it's going to 16, but it's here and we're gonna have to deal with it no matter what. The Big 12 has a very interesting model that they have been pushing and that the SEC has been trying, has also been kind of the Big 10 and the SEC were originally really pushing the 4-4-2-1 and then the three at large. Now what the SEC, they're kind of switching course with and going with the Big 12, and the Big 12 wants the five highest conference champions and then the 11 at large. And the reason for that is they say that it is, I believe they said it, the commissioner said it was earning it on the field. And I think the biggest problem with that is I don't think you're really earning it on the field unless you're a conference champion. Because it doesn't matter what happens, you're going to put 11 teams in the hands of the playoff committee that has shown that they aren't always going to put the 11 best teams in. It'll sometimes align the interests and of other conferences. And you're always going to have the controversial of should they get in or should they get in. But I think when you have the four automatic bids and the two automatic bids, I think you're a lot more in better shape if you're a if you're a the way you play in your conference games makes it mean more. Like if Clemson and Miami play and you're the top two, that's almost a must-win game. If Alabama and Georgia play and they're the top two, you don't want to lose that game because you're going to lose your spot in the conference. I think it's interesting. I don't like that it's going to 16, but if there's going to be a model, I think it has to be the 4-4-2-1-3.
Yeah, and I mean, just to reiterate what you said, that the SEC has flipped their goal to kind of now that they would be perfectly fine with straight seeding. Lane Kiffin talked about it. He said that, well, if it were up to me, we would go straight 16, and everybody loved it. Everybody from all con it felt like everybody from the ACC and the Big 12 were eating it up. And I'm like, guys, that's gonna kill you. That's a total trap. If you go to straight 16, you will not, think about the disasters that you're going to have if you're an ACC fan or if you're a Big 12 fan. Yeah, it's going to be a living nightmare at that point. And to like you, to re talk about your point, you said that you should want to take as much away from the College Football Playoff Committee, and automatic qualifiers do that. If everyone knows which conferences are getting in anyway, all the playoff committee is doing is picking like one at large bid, and they're just seeding people now in the tournament. They're not picking who gets in or who gets out. You've earned it on the field if you've qualified. That is the biggest deal, is you want to take as much power away from these guys that honestly they probably don't know a lot about football. You want to take as much power away from them, and the way you do that is automatic qualifiers for the conferences. I mean, we don't want to talk about it, but we can't rewind the clock 20 years. This is the reality we're living in. We got to put guardrails up, and this is our best option, in my opinion.
The straight seeding is very, very interesting because at least with the 4-4-2-1, you are at least guaranteeing yourself that you are going to have two teams in the 16-team playoff for the next however many years that this 16-team playoff goes in effect. If you go with the straight seeding, there's only the guarantee is one, and that's the conference champion. The committee then selects, okay, well, you're a 9-3. We'll say you're Purdue versus a 9-3 Oklahoma team, and you have to put the record, you have to put the records and the strength of schedule and all that kind of stuff, and you have to make the committee choose between those three or those two. And it's like that for however many teams that are 9-3 or the teams that are 9-2. And I feel like not a shot to the Big 12 and not a shot to the ACC, but they're not always the strongest conferences. So that strength of schedule and that strength of record and all that and all the indexes that the committee uses is going to come back and bite you if you go with the 5+11 format if you are a Big 12 and you're an ACC fan. If you're an SEC and you're a Big 10 fan, I think you love the 5+11 model, but it really just depends on what side of the coin you're on.
Yeah, Gavin, now we got to hear from you. What do you think? You've kind of been sitting back quiet the whole time.
Yeah, no, I mean, y'all are basically saying the same thing I would say, and I couldn't agree with you guys more, especially with the likes of the playoff committee and just trying and keep them out with like seeding as much as you can. I mean, we've seen it. I mean, year after year, we've seen teams kind of get pushed out of the playoffs whenever they probably could have or should have deserved to make it in. But yeah, Dawson, I kind of agree with like the automatic qualifiers. I mean, you'll have four Big Ten, four SEC, two ACC, and whatever, but that guarantees ACC teams in there. And I mean, I know SEC, Big Ten, they'll get more teams in there, which I mean they should. But it makes it more of an interesting season because if you go with just straight seeding, then I mean, like you were saying, there's more margin of error for you in your season. You could drop three games and still kind of see yourself slide in there. But with the automatic qualifier, I mean, every game counts. It kind of feels like how it used to be with the 4-team playoff where you couldn't really lose a game. I mean, you could lose a game, but you really couldn't lose a second game or you would be done for. So, it's going to be interesting to see, but I think the automatic qualifier is the way to go with that.
I think so as well.
Yeah, I think the conference champions should be the automatic qualifiers, but I don't think there should be any more automatic qualifiers past the conference champions.
Yep, I agree. All right, so kind of transitioning with some similar with that. So we've kind of heard some news about the SEC possibly leaving the NCAA after a whole bunch of debating about different things. So Dawson, do you kind of want to lead us with that?
Yeah, I do. And, most of this stems out of their meetings down there in Destin, to where they're getting a little aggravated at the NCAA right now. They're getting aggravated at the process. They're not happy. They want more. And really, I guess their only way of figuring things out is to bully their way through it, I mean, if the SEC past 2030 racks in a couple of more teams that leave the ACC, or the Big Ten can rack in a couple of ACC teams, maybe a Big 12 team here or there, they're gonna have these huge conferences to where now, like we spoke before, a couple of episodes ago on the podcast, it's no longer going to be the NCAA. It is going to be an NFL style where you've got the AFC and the NFC, the Big Ten and the SEC, and those teams are gonna battle it out. Then they're gonna have their own playoff. And then they're going to be the crown champion. When you're talking about this, though, it is so dangerous, and that's why the playoff talk is so big. Is if the SEC and the Big Ten end up not getting what they want, what is stopping them from after 2030, when the media rights renew, them gobbling up the other remaining teams that are trying to buy out of their contract? Clemson, Florida State, Miami. Who knows from the ACC and possibly some teams from the Big 12. Who's stopping them from buying, having those teams hop on? And then now the SEC and the Big 10 will be able to go to these TV networks and say, hey, we've got all the viewership. We've got all the top teams. These two conferences make, yada, 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 this amount of money. Rework these TV deals with us and leave out the NCAA. We'll work on getting our own stuff together. It's all about TV contracts. That's the biggest thing. So if I'm the NCAA, well, first of all, I think I would, maybe look at getting a chairman, and maybe getting a commissioner for it now. We've never wanted that, but look, we're in a different era of college football. We're in a professionalized era of college football, and if they don't catch up, they're going to get left behind. To where, if you have a commissioner for college football, he is the ultimate boss now over all the conferences, over all the athletic directors, over all the commissioners of the conferences. Oklahoma and Texas joining the SEC probably doesn't happen if there's a commissioner in college football to keep the scales balanced. If the NCAA is smart enough, they will keep these scales balanced as long as they can. Right now, it's total chaos in these conferences, and everybody wants to look at Greg Sankey and call him basically the devil. But I have a hard time believing that Greg Sankey is doing anything different than any of us would do in his position. His job as the SEC commissioner is to gather power and to get money to his schools. And do you know who his bosses are? The athletic directors and presidents at these SEC schools. And when you've got all these presidents telling you, do what's best for our school and do what's best for the SEC, what are you going to do? Are you going to say, no, for the good of the game, I'm not going to allow Oklahoma and Texas, and if Clemson or FSU, if those teams want to join, I'm not going to allow it because I have good morals. You know what's going to happen to him? They're going to throw him out. They're going to have a new guy in there that will do it. So I think for the NCAA, they need to focus quickly on getting a commissioner and getting a committee together to be able to have power over these conferences, so that they can be the good guys in turn to keep the scales balanced in college football.
I've kind of heard it over like the season or whatever, but do you think Nick Saban would be a good candidate for commissioner?
Oh, no, no,
No?
no, no, no,
Okay, I
no, no,
didn't think so.
no. He's too much of an SEC homer. I can't get on board with that. No.
I didn't think so. I just wanted to know your opinion on
Quick no.
that. But yeah, no, Dawson, I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's just crazy times we're living in with college athletics, but I mean, it's what we've come to now. But yeah, just whenever 2030 comes, watch out, because I mean, you never know what's going to happen. And I mean, even more recent, like you never know what's going to happen. So just going to keep up with it. So Daniel, what are your thoughts with it though?
I really think that the SEC leaving is a empty threat. I don't think that the SEC would leave the NCAA. if they got the Big Ten to go with them, then I could see it because it would be two super conferences depending on what happens at the end of the year. And I know that with the way that things were looking, because the SEC and the Big Ten were adding all these teams, and now we have playoff expansion, and they were siding together. So I'm like, we're gonna get four, we're each gonna get four. It's a partnership. I'm gonna help you out, you're gonna help me out. We're both gonna make a bunch of TV revenue, school revenue, ridiculous amounts of money. But now that the SEC has kind of flipped, and now they're going more of the straight seeding route. Unless there's something else that changes, I don't see the SEC leaving. Go back to your point about the commissioner. I think it's been past time that that college football's had a commissioner. I think once the NIL deals and NIL became legalized in college football, the sport should have had a commissioner. I think you would have had probably more teams that caught with their hand in the cookie jar, so to speak, with tampering. And I don't think you would have had Oregon, USC, UCLA all jump ship to go join the Big Ten and kill the Pac-12 conference. I think that's really when the sport started to kind of just, I'm not going to say transcend downward, but it started to look more and more like this is going to be a two conference sport, and the rest of them are just going to kind of be fill-ins for these.
I totally lost my train of thought here, but I got it. What I would say is, if you had a committee a couple of years ago and a commissioner, you would be able to, regionalize the sports world like it's supposed to be. If you go back to the 80s and 90s and, 70s, that was perfect. That was, even 2000s, that was perfect. Conferences were regional. It made sense. The SMU was not a ACC team. And the priority wasn't about trying to make $1 billion. It was about doing well, but also putting a good product on the field and taking care of your schools and your teams. Now it's turned into a sprint for first place now between the SEC and the Big Ten. If you were to go back to a regional format, I think it would make way more sense. Go back to the original ACC conference. Let's go back to the original SEC. Kick
A&M.
Texas out, kick Oklahoma out, kick Texas A&M out. Remove those Texas schools. Go back to that original SEC area that we had not too long ago. Pac-12, let's bring them back. Big Ten, let's bring those teams back to where now it's regional. And, typically in history, it's changed as of the last probably 20 years. You recruited your area as well as conferences. Local recruiting was so big, and that's what made things so cool when you played out of conference matchups, is typically it was just in bowl games when you had to travel across the country to go play a team. Sure. What does USC, the real USC in California, what do the California athletes look like when they've got to play Florida, or when they've got to play an East Coast team, or when they've got to play a Texas team? Who's going to win in that situation? Or when the Southeast teams in this area, everyone's recruiting they're farming their athletic areas, and they take them up north to play Ohio State, or Ohio State plays us down here. What is that looking like? And guess what? I can tell you one thing, it made for really exciting football. Ask Woody Hayes how that felt whenever he had to drag his Buckeyes to play the Tigers back then. He had to play those guys from the South.
I do want to say something real quick. When you go back, I talk about the SEC bully. I'm not going to say that the SEC has lost its perennial power, but I want to say that the SEC is not where they once were. They haven't played for a national title since 2021, and Kirby Smart's Bulldogs won it. It has been the Big Ten, the Big Ten, and the Big Ten. The Big Ten, I'm not going to say they've overtaken the SEC, but the Big Ten has very much slim that gap to where the SEC is not going to have as much sway over all of these schools as they once were, or as they once had, or even the NCAA. Because once upon a time, the SEC was the money making college football. Like, they were the highest of everything. They won the titles, they made the money, they did everything the way the NCAA wanted them to. But now that the roles have kind of flipped to where they're not on top all the time anymore, I would say that the power that the SEC once had is not as strong as it used to be, and their persuasion and the way that they want things done aren't going to be heard as loud.
I don't know. I mean, the last 3 years, yeah, the SEC hasn't had a team to win the national championship, but they've been there. You know, they've even this year, you know, you had Texas in there, and overall, they're representing a large portion of the top teams in America. And I am not one of those people that is just going to ignore the SEC dominance the last 25 years. It's the same with college baseball. Is the SEC having a down year in the postseason? Absolutely. Is the SEC overrated? Yeah, probably. But are they still the best conference in baseball? Yeah, no doubt in my mind. You know, and it tells you by their championships. And the same with football. Let's go back to the last 25 years and tell me who are the champions and what conference they came from. You know, for a while there, it was just SEC. Then you had Ohio State break it up in 2014. Then Alabama, then Clemson, you know, Alabama, Clemson, LSU. So, I mean, you saw this big pattern for the last 25 years of just straight SEC dominance. So, I mean, to me, the last 3 years really doesn't change anything. But I will say this, you were right about the point of the Big Ten slimming the gap. And I'm not one for conspiracy theories, but is it NIL? I mean, has the reign of terror of the bagman finally been legalized? So now that these northern schools feel like they can do it now, these schools that always have had the money, the Ohio States, the Michigans, now they're able to compete with the SEC and they're able to really go out there and dominate on the field. You know, I don't want to speculate, but is it because the SEC was buying out everybody back in the day? You know, is that the reason?
I mean, I won't go into that conspiracy, and I'm not trying to be all recency biased and say that the Big Ten is past the SEC has longstanding been the most dominant conference in college football, and I think everybody can agree on that. But I'm not going to disagree with you either along the lines of has NIL closed that gap, and I think you're going to say absolutely right, and I think that's what college football needed was for these gaps to close because. Every year an SEC team wins and then they reload. They don't have a regression year. They would always reload because everybody wanted to come play for that winning school. And if they couldn't go to that winning school, they would go to one of the other schools in the SEC that at least put up a fight or battled with that school for the chance to be there. I do think that NIL has a lot to do with it. I think Ohio State, we've seen it this past year. They had a loaded roster with Jeremiah Smith and Caleb Downs and all those guys, Judkins, they had a, what was it, $20 million roster along the lines of it. That's enough to beat anybody. I do think NIL has closed the gaps majorly, but I still think the gap is still there. It's just not as large as it once was.
All right, Gavin, tell us your opinion on why you think the SEC sucks now.
I mean, I do think it. I won't say they suck. I mean, obviously they're a good conference, but it's definitely. I think it is with NIL. I mean, you got like you were saying, Dawson, Michigan, Ohio State, all those teams up north who already had money, and now they're kind of, I guess, taking advantage, so to speak, of it and using it to their advantage. So, I guess that's just kind of why you've seen them win the past couple of years. But I mean, the SEC's been right there with them. But I think it's kind of made it more competitive too. And I mean, you never know who's going to come out on top, a Big Ten team or SEC team in those games. So it's just going to be good to see for the next couple of years how everything plays between the two conferences. But yeah, that's just kind of my thoughts on it. I feel like NIL kind of has helped with the Big Ten kind of get up there, up to par with how the SEC was.
I also agree.
All right, so switching gears now, we're going to kind of talk into some recruiting. So, Daniel, do you want to go first with South Carolina? Then Dawson and I'll kind of wrap it up with Clemson side. Is that how you want to do it? Or do you want us to go first? It don't matter to me.
It don't matter to me. I have some stuff on you guys. So, if you guys want to go first, then we can wrap it up with either one, whichever one.
Okay, we can go first. So, kind of just recapping Clemson's recent commits, and I know Dawson's got the whole list with him, and he'll kind of go into more in-depth with them. But four-star offensive tackle Leo Delaney committed this week, along with four-star offensive tackle Carter Scruggs, and then also three-star edge rusher J.R. Hardrick committed to Clemson. So that now makes it 18 total commits for the Tigers. And from looking at 24/7 Sports, that is now the number three overall class in the 2026 class. So, yeah, go ahead, Dawson.
Yeah, they've been hot. I mean, really hot. I think last week sometime I put out an emoji. It was a tiger emoji, and it was a couple of them, and we hit on all of them. I spoke with Leo Delaney the night before he committed, and that's when I found out from basically from him and our conversation that he was probably a Clemson lock. I believe they said he really, hard committed on Tuesday. So obviously that official visit weekend, it changes people's lives. Carter Scruggs wasn't far behind him. I kind of got the hint on him, got the read on him probably a day before he committed. And J.R. Hardwick got him, early on. So I mean, first of all, let's not just glance over this O-line. This is like the most talented O-line class that Clemson has ever had in their history. Previous years you would have maybe one or two 4 stars and then stack the rest of the class with 3 and 3 stars and guys like that. But no, we went out and got six guys, elite players across the board. These guys are huge. And this was a big year. That next year will be a big year for that O-line because you're going to be losing some guys. So now you're going to be able to stack who you brought in 2024 with a couple of the guys that you brought in this past year with Braden Jacobs and guys like that, and now you're going to have that 2026 O-line class coming in, hopefully under Matt Luke. And if you're a quarterback, like Tate Reynolds, or if you're, a running back, if Jay Lamar's out there listening to this somewhere, you're looking at this and you're licking your lips saying, wow, this is going to be a crazy team to run behind. And like, not even the O-line, but I mean, at wide receiver. Naheem Burrows, On3's got him as the number two wide receiver in the country. I mean, that guy can play. He is a straight dog. I have watched his film. I mean, he gives you everything that you want. Same with Connor Stallings, just a or Connor Salmon, just a blazer. I mean, he can roll. He is quick, fast. I mean, he's a track runner. And then you finished up with Gordon Sellers right there as your third best guy that I thought that we brought in. And I mean, that was a tough battle, really. I mean, you had South Carolina who was really in the lead for him a long time. And you were able to seal the deal. I mean, that's a huge deal. And talk about guys that South Carolina was in on early. Let's talk about Polo Anderson. South Carolina had that guy wrapped around their finger early on in his recruiting, and Clemson was able to fight all the way back to get him in. Now, I know he grew up a Clemson fan, but still, I mean, when you've got to fight that hard against an in-state rival who, let's just be honest, mops up South Carolina recruiting, to be honest. I mean, this is their turf. There's a whole lot of kids in this state that grow up Gamecock fans, and I mean, all three of us live here. We know it. In your high school, there's, unless you live in Clemson, really where the athlete hotspots are becoming now is, Columbia, some of the upstate, Charleston, the beach, even Florence now. All these kids are Gamecock fans. And to be honest, South Carolina's doing a great job with them. They're prioritizing them. They're saying, we want you. So it's really easy for South Carolina now to walk into these schools and get these kids full attention compared to Clemson, who has, struggled these past couple of years on in-state recruiting. But just to see us grab a player of the caliber of Polo Anderson, that kind of gives me a little bit more hope for these upcoming years, because I'm going to tell you, 2026, 2027, and 2028, South Carolina is about to have a ton of great athletes in their state.
Yeah, I'm excited to see with that with the South Carolina players, but I kind of want to talk back on the offensive line, Dawson. So I remember a couple years back, we would, like you were saying, maybe get one or two good offensive linemen and then some other ones. But I mean, this is probably the most exciting offensive line yet. I mean, Matt Luke, he's been doing his job, man, and he's a great recruiter. But the only other commit I could really think of And I mean, I know there's obviously some other big ones, but the last one that I remember us being really excited about was Jackson Carman. I mean, we got him over Ohio State, and then I mean, that was just like our big time offensive lineman recruiting. It was kind of like we kind of stopped there, but now, I mean, we've got all these guys: Leo Delaney, Chancellor Barclay, Carter Scruggs. I'm looking at it right here, Grant Wise. I mean, Adam Guthrie. You know, all those guys who are committed. Braden Wimes. I mean, all these guys who are coming to play for us. So, like you were saying, with those other commits, wide receivers, running backs, quarterbacks, I mean, as a whole, you got to be really excited for this 2026 class coming in. It kind of reminds me of the 2020 class. I was looking back at it here a minute ago, and they were ranked the third overall class. And I think that one was more defensive heavy. But I think since the 2020 class, maybe you can even say the 2023 class with Peter Woods and TJ Park and all those guys. But I think this might be the next exciting or the best exciting class, I mean, since 2020, really.
Dabo in like 2013 was, I believe he was kind of like addressing people, and he was saying, "Hey, it's, we got the pieces. This is these next couple of teams are going to be the teams that you're going to see a lot of movement with, because we were at, we had really stacked recruiting classes, and even going into 2014, 2015, stacking recruiting classes, making these guys elite, and to where they can break out." And they did, if you want to, say 16 and then 18, both won the national championship with the, that kind of core group of guys. That 2013, 14, and 15, even 16 class were the core group of guys that won both of those national championships. And what makes you a for me, what makes you be in the conversation for the best to do it in college football as a coach, and even just as any team, is you winning different national championships with different recruiting classes. So 16 and 18 were pretty much won off, roughly the same class. You could say 18 and 17 did have a big role, but you still had a lot of guys from 15, 16, and 14 on that second natty. But what Dabo's done these last couple of years is a lot of people are going to call it falling off, but I just feel like it's you're just churning out. You're just getting ready. I mean, and it started to me with 2023. I mean, that was huge. You had Peter Woods, TJ Parker. You had all these elite players, and then you capped it with 24, which like was insane from offensive standpoint and from a defensive standpoint. Who now, both of those classes are getting ready to make their biggest impacts this upcoming year. You're going to see what those two classes have been building on, as well as many guys from that 22 class. So now you've got those 3 years stacked together, ready to make an instant impact this upcoming year.
Yeah, I'm excited to see. I was looking back, and that 2020 class was the third rank, and we had 5 4-stars on that class. So DJU, and then Brian Brazee, Trenton Simpson, Miles Murphy, DeMarcus Bowman, who didn't kind of pan out, but all these other guys on here, I mean, they're just some great guys. I mean, RJ Mickens is on here, Walker Parks. I mean, some of those guys that we just got finished with this past season, but I mean, you just got to think, man, what does the future hold for Clemson football? I mean, with this year and then with this 26 class coming in too.
Yeah, I mean, your hope is that you keep these guys, but I don't want to be a Debbie Downer and just say we're gonna lose them. You gotta sometimes you just gotta appreciate the moment. You gotta appreciate where your staff is, and really give Dabo his flowers to say that. I mean, what he's been able to do with recruiting and now changing his coaching staff, saying, "Hey, what I was doing previously, it just wasn't working. So now I've got to get back to, getting the best coaches, working on recruiting the best players." And I mean, that's really, I don't think Dabo is going to get enough respect for he was able to stick to his guns and still, hopefully the next couple of years, he's going to end up on the right side of history.
I know I kind of said something to you this past week, Dawson, but do you think Matt Luke's the best hire Dabo Swinney's ever done now?
I
I mean, I
mean,
know there's some
you got
good ones
Brett
out there, but Matt,
Venables,
yeah.
you got Brett Venables, you got Jeff Scott. I mean, Tony Elliott, even, people want to hate on him, but the dude was a big key. And I think it's just really early. I mean, is he one of the best? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think he was almost a a different age of Clemson football. It showed that, hey, Dabo wasn't just going to lay down and roll over. Is he said, okay, who's the best guy that we can hire? And they said, well, you know, it's Matt Luke, but he's retired and he doesn't want to come coach again. He wants to be with his family. Dabo said, I don't care. Let's call him. You know, let's do what we can do to get him here. And thank God Clemson still held that name to where Matt Luke even said it. He was like, there's not a ton of programs that I would have come out of retirement for, and this is one of them. So, you know, he had to do it. So, I mean, now you've been able to insert these elite coaches, you know, speaking Tom Allen as well, into this fold and get your recruiting back up. And, you know, if you're Clemson, you're kind of hoping that you're gonna see Clemson, you know, kind of prepare and go on another little one of these few year runs.
So Daniel, with you being from the other perspective, with South Carolina, so what are your kind of thoughts on this with this Clemson recruiting class and beyond?
Man, I really think you just got to give Dabo Swinney and Matt Luke his flowers. I think Matt Luke has put on an absolute masterclass with this O-line that is coming into Clemson that he's got. These guys are maulers. Like I'm looking at it here. 6'6", 295, 6'6", 292, 6'3", 300, 6'4", 280, and then another one 6'5", 280. Like, and these guys that aren't even on college campus yet that are still going to go through the program. They're going to buy in. And I feel like Clemson's just going to have a bunch of maulers up front, man. That's something that a lot of Tiger fans haven't been able to see. Like, you know, the running backs have been good and the O-line has been, I would say that the talent of the running back kind of outshined the O-line just a little bit when talking about Clemson, because I think ETN was a great running back, and then you had Will Shipley, and I think their talents kind of made the I'm not gonna say made the O-line look better than what they were, but in a way, just a little bit. But I think that this class right here has the opportunity to be something really special for the Tigers. I think Max Brown, once he gets on campus, the brother of Sammy Brown will be a good pickup as well. I think there's a lot of under the radar pickups that Clemson has for this class and forward, and that we're going to be talking about in a couple of years, saying that we're glad we got these guys.
We're
Well, as a Tiger fan, you're going to say
got a closet Clemson fan over here. I've been saying
that.
that for the last 15 years.
Oh, man.
I'll be in Death Valley for LSU, so I'm never going to beat those allegations, man.
Well, you know, Daniel's I don't really think Daniel's doing too good on his win record being at Clemson for the Tigers, so maybe he'll bring us some bad luck. I'm sure he's hoping that.
Little bit. Just a little bit.
All right, so Dawson, is there anything else you want to touch on recruiting wise? Or, I mean, there's still more to come, right? Maybe.
Maybe, just maybe. Obviously, the big name we want is Tyler Atkinson, but you know, or I would like to say, like, just quick about him is a little over a year ago, we had no chance with that kid. He had totally blocked us out, and you insert Ben Boulware, who builds this relationship with him, and now we're a contender for him. I mean, we may not land this guy. Because we are pulling him out of Georgia country, but it speaks wonders about what Ben Boulware has already been able to do if he's been able to get that kid on campus, and get him in for an official visit. I mean, I would say right now, I would say that there's no clear cut number one for him. You know, it used to be, yeah, it was Georgia, but now it's kind of the scales are tipped a little bit. But I think not having a clear-cut number one is a good thing for Clemson. You know, that's all I'll say about that.
He's at Oregon this weekend, right?
Yes.
Yep.
I think that's going to be real tough to beat Lanning or Kirby. I think Lanning's one of the better recruiters, and I think Kirby's one of the best. You know, I know you guys are on a run and everything, but I think that's going to be really difficult to pull him out of Georgia country or prevent him from going to another dog in Dan Lanning.
Well, I guess I'd say to that is have Tyler Atkinson text Justin Flo and ask him how going to Oregon went for him.
That is a good point. I mean, that guy's still in college. I mean, and he transferred again, right? Or is he? Yeah.
I believe so.
Yeah. That's crazy to think of. But yeah. So, Daniel, what do you have for us now, coming from the South Carolina side of things?
Well, it's been two big weekends on in Columbia, South Carolina. Actually, yesterday we had two twin brothers that are 4 stars on the defensive side of the ball commit, Andrew and I'm blanking on, I think
Aiden.
it's Aiden Harris.
Yeah.
Two guys on the defensive side of the ball. What I'm hearing is that a lot of the visits that are going on campus are being led by players that are there. And especially on the defensive line and the defensive side of the ball, guys like Dylan Stewart and guys like Desmond, I butcher his last name all the time. I apologize. Umezulu, or however you say his name, has been leading the charge and trying to get these guys on campus. I do know that 4-star quarterback Landon Duckworth was on campus this past weekend. Not this past weekend, but the weekend before last. 4-star offensive tackle JB Shabazz was on campus. He said in an interview with Fisher, Brewer said that he really set the bar on this visit, and that really it's one of it came in as one of his top two schools, and we're still gonna have to battle out Ohio State for it. But I think that's a really good sign when you hear that your visit set the bar, and that these other schools are going to have to meet that and beat it at the same, have to beat that standard that has already been set. He's a 6'7" offensive tackle, 295, just an absolute mauler. I think he would be a great addition to the South Carolina class. We're in the mix for another 3-star corner, but he's the number three corner in the country, Kerry Adams. Looking good on him, but we're in battles with other schools for them. But to Carolina fans, I would say stay tuned. I don't think we're done just yet with those two that came out yesterday.
Yeah,
I do
something
want
I
to
want
ask
to
you about.
go ahead, Dawson.
Yeah, sorry.
You're good. You're good.
I do want to ask you about one player specifically, and that's Zion Giles. He committed to you guys a few months back, and I actually spoke to him probably a week before he committed. And I'm gonna be really honest, I swung and missed on him. Honestly, I did not do my due diligence. I did not do extra background research. I just took it purely off what me and him talked about, and I thought he was a Clemson commit. I really did. Up until about 12 hours before his commitment, I was, somewhat sold on him being a Clemson commit. But one thing that stood out to me about what his dad said, and he said that, Zion a couple of years ago had some coaches tell him that, he wasn't there, that he wasn't physically ready. And I couldn't help but think, oh my gosh, Clemson told this dude like 3 years ago that he wasn't good enough to play at their level. And to be honest, he wouldn't have been. I mean, he came out of nowhere. I mean, now he's an elite talent in my opinion now. I mean, I watched him play at Carver's Bay like 2 years ago.
280 Mahler.
Yeah, I
He
mean, like
he's an incredible talent.
two 2 years ago, he was still under the radar, but I mean, he stood out to me incredibly. But now, like, just like sitting back and thinking on what his dad said about that recruitment, it just like makes me wonder. I'm like, wow. I mean, that just tells you the level that South Carolina is. They're not here to push away any in-state player. They're going to do their job throughout a player's career who they see potential in. And situations like that, it paid off for South Carolina to where they built a great relationship with Zion and were able to snag him.
I truly believe that Shane Beamer puts a priority tag on everywhere here in South Carolina, because you have guys that came to Columbia and they can just make an impact. Like, look at Nick Emenwori. He was very kind of lowly recruited out of high school and really popped on the scene and really had a great career at the University of South Carolina. I think there's a lot of under the radar in-state talent. And I think that Shane Beamer really does focus on building the guys that love the state, love the program, love everything about South Carolina. And I think what a lot of it has to do with is a lot of these guys have played with each other, or at least know each other, played against each other. So they already kind of have that brotherhood when they come into campus, and it just really all gels from there. You're not going to hit on everyone, and you're not going to hit on all of them. But I think that that has a big part of what to do when the culture comes together at South Carolina. I think from where the program was 5 years ago, after Will Muschamp and after all that saga that happened and the turmoil that the program was in, I think you can't help but give Shane Beamer his flowers and the culture and the recruiting that he's building in the stacked SEC.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to touch on. So South Carolina has seven commits right now in the 26 class, and four of them are from South Carolina. So you got Jazavian Currents from Rock Hill. You got Zion Giles, like Dawson mentioned, from Hemingway slash Georgetown area. You got Jamel House from Newberry, and then you got Anthony Baxter from Rock Hill. So I mean, keeping those guys in state, like I said, four out of the seven. I mean, I really do like what Shane Beamer does with trying to keep in-state talent in South Carolina. And I mean, like you were saying, Daniel, there's some guys who really float under the radar, and I mean, you never know what they can turn out to be either.
I agree 100%. I mean, when you look at the Charleston area, the beach area, even shout out hometown Florence, but the Lenore Sellers is the starting quarterback at the university and potentially a Heisman candidate this year. So, I got to, but all the there's a lot of in-state talent. You just have to find it, and he's done a very good job of finding it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And even like with the small schools, it seems like, I mean, you got those guys who are just like downright dogs who can flat out play. I mean, like a 1A school, a 2A school. And like you were saying, you got to go out there and find them. It's kind of like whenever you're playing NCAA football and you're doing your recruiting thing and you scout them and you can see whether they're a diamond in the rough or not. I mean, that's what I think of.
That's really what it feels like, man. It just the trick with recruiting the 1A guys and the 2A guys is, are they bigger than everybody? Are they just kind of pushing them around because of their size? Are they truly that good? And I can't really think of a case so far that has been a miss in that department. I think he's done a very good job of scouting and evaluating, and it doesn't just play into how they play on the field, but also the camps and stuff like that. How do they perform against some of the top talent?
Yeah, that's another thing that I do notice is you have all these schools in South Carolina, like high school teams, they'll come to Columbia for the Shane Beamer camp, and then they'll do like the 7-on-7 games. And I mean, that's really and truly where you do find the real good talent that comes to those events. And yeah, that's just, I mean, I'll see teams have film from the year, and you can see them playing in the South Carolina indoor facility. And like I said, that's where you really truly find that talent at is just actually going there and showing out.
And the cool thing about it is it's not just limited to the South Carolina teams. Like you'll have some teams come from Georgia and you'll have some teams come from North Carolina and you they'll put some will participate in the lineman camps and then you got the skill 7-on-7. So, in reality, I think it's a recruiter's dream to have all these camps and the 7-on-7 tournaments from schools from North Carolina, Virginia, Florida, Georgia, wherever you come from, come show what you can do.
Yeah, no doubt. So, anything else you want to touch on the South Carolina side, Daniel?
Not at the moment. I just want to say stay tuned.
All righty. How about you, Dawson? Anything else you want to mention?
I do not, other than just keep your Twitter notifications on this week. That's all I gotta tell people.
All right. Well, you heard it from Dawson. You heard it from Daniel. Another great episode with Daniel on. Each time he comes on, or I know this is the second time on, but it just feels like we have a good conversation each time. He's well knowledgeable, so yeah, that'll do it, guys. Anything else for the episode as a whole?
I do want to say one thing, Daniel. If you could plug in your Twitter right here, might be a good opportunity here for so our fans and college football people can keep up with you.
Yep, you guys can follow me on X at Daniel underscore Coates 13, COATES. But that's where I'm at. I'm posting about football, baseball, college sports, all kind of stuff.
There you go. Well, make sure you're keeping up with all three of us. We're definitely in on everything just about with the college sports world and beyond. So, yeah, I think that'll do it, guys. So, it's been Gavin and Dawson and Daniel on the 12th episode of the Tiger View Podcast. And as always, go Tigers.